Thank you very much, Sheila, for that warm introduction. And I cannot tell you how important Paul Wellstone and Sheila are to this campaign. They have been stalwarts from the very beginning, and Minnesota is just lucky to have both of them. That's all I can say. And I think that there must be something in the air up here in Minnesota, because did you see George's gestures as he was speaking? It was reminiscent of Paul. He was going like that. George, I want to thank you so much for being here and for being supportive. I mean, you were a great mayor, and Civic League, we worked together, and it's just so great to have you a part of this campaign as well. I also want to thank Pam Weatherland, I want to thank Jackie Stevenson, R.T. Ryback. I want to thank all those of you who've made this important step forward, Eileen Weber. I want to thank you for your willingness to step forward with me in this presidential election. And I already got a little advice as I was walking in. I always like advice. You can never tell when it's going to be good, you know? And a guy walked up to me the other day and he said, Bill, I said, yeah, just remember, there are three kinds of people. I said, yeah? He said, yeah, those who can count and those who can't. And so I was getting good advice today, though. I've been out there now about 9 months running. And I think things are beginning to move. I truly think things are beginning to move. One of the reasons that is so is because we're very clear about why I'm running and what I want to do. I was in about my third or fourth month out campaigning, and somebody came up to me and said, Bill, and I said, yeah. They said, you're running for president? I said, yeah. They said, well, what would you like your legacy to be? I thought that was a little premature. Because before you have a legacy, you have to get the nomination, you have to win, you have to serve with distinction, you have to die. And then you get a legacy, right? But the thought focused my attention. I thought, what would I like to do? What would I like to achieve if I was President of the United States? And first, I'd like to have presided over a country for 4 or 8 years that was at peace, and had joy and respect for people around me. Second, I'd like to have been the protector of the natural environment. And why is that so? I was reminded of that the other day when we kicked off the fall part of this campaign in my hometown of Crystal City, Missouri. 3,492 people. They're all over these Crystal City people. And there were about 80 to 90 press from around the world there. And so I wanted to show them something that had meant so much to me in my life, the Mississippi River. And so what I did was toward sunset, and I took them all down to the river and stopped and asked them to think about the river the way I thought about it. When I was a young kid and used to train for basketball season, I would run through the fields and over the railroad tracks and along the small roads down to the edge of the Mississippi River. And I would stop there in a unique moment of solitude and listen to the wind blowing through the cottonwood trees and watch the current flowing, bringing what it has scoured from half a continent down toward New Orleans. And I'd step back and look up at the bluffs, the big limestone bluffs behind me, and what I would think of is permanence. What I would think of is all those who've been in that place before in a world of, you know, instant gratification and news on half an hour, that how important it is for us to be in touch with something that is larger than we are and lasts longer than we do. And for me, that was the river. That's why being a protector of the natural environment is the second important thing that I'd like to do as President of the United States. The third thing is to be the good steward of a good economy. And by that, I mean an economy that takes everybody to higher economic ground. Not an economy. Not an economy that just takes 40% of the people to higher economic ground. Not an economy that can feel good where the Dow Jones IRAs is high, but family farmers in deep trouble in this country. Not an economy that can look around and say that working families are struggling, but seems to be more other people are doing well, so we don't have to worry. But an economy that takes everybody to higher economic ground. The fourth thing, it's my hope after 4 or 8 years that because of what we were able to do, and Sheila Wellstone will be a big part of this, I guarantee you, that because of what we've been able to do, every child in America has a chance to realize his or her potential. And that means doing something to reduce the number, 14 million children who still live in poverty in this country. With an economy as good as ours, we ought to be able to do better than that, and I believe we can. And in an economy as good as ours, we ought to be able to increase the number of people in America who have health insurance. Yeah. And finally for me, in terms of a legacy, I would hope because of what we did over 4 or 8 years, that we were able to move our collective humanity maybe a half inch forward. That we were able to take the issue of racial understanding in America and bring it to the point where it's the ultimate common sense for every American. That everyone would know that if you're your brother's keeper, you have to walk your talk, if that's your morality. If we want to lead the world by the power of our example as a multiracial society that works, we have to do a little better than we've been doing. And that if neither world leadership nor morality particularly convince you on this issue, self-interest should convince you, because by the year 2010, less than 60% of the people entering the workforce in America are going to be native-born white Americans. And that means, if labor economics means anything, that the future, the economic future of the children of white Americans will depend increasingly on the talents of non-white Americans, so that better racial understanding in America is not some esoteric thing, it's not ideology, it's demographics, and it's the ultimate common sense for anyone who would lead this country, and I hope that we'll be able to do that. And we're trying to do this campaign in a different way. So that's what I'd like the legacy to be. So we're trying to do this campaign by respecting voters, by going out and meeting voters face to face, the way Paul Wellstone campaigned for the chance to the first time in the US. Going out, looking people in the eye, let them ask you questions, let them take your measure and decide, is this the person that I want to have as President of the United States? Not just some flickering image that's split in over the television set into your living room meant to manipulate you in one direction or another, but see how he moves his hands, right? Or see how he responds to a particular question, or take his measure in the way you choose to take your measure of anyone who would seek to be your president and determine whether that's the person that you want to have lead you. So it's easy to do that in a place like Iowa where you need face-to-face retail campaigning. It's easy to do that in a place like New Hampshire. And we're having a tremendous response there. I mean, in New Hampshire, a month ago, We had over 400 people who came from 14 states and knocked on doors in New Hampshire for 8 days in the hottest period of the summer, and knocked on 35,000 doors and made contact with 10,000 New Hampshire residents, and in so doing, reached out and brought them into the campaign, not canvassing them in November or December when you just want their vote, but canvassing them in July and August when you want them to be a part of your campaign so that they feel a part of something that's bigger than themselves and a part of real change in America. And I think that that's one of the reasons that in New Hampshire now, I'm in a dead heat with the vice president. California too, you know? California politics, you raise money, put TV on, TV ads on, that's it. That's politics. I said, why should I respect the voters of California less than I respect the voters of Iowa, New Hampshire, Minnesota, or Massachusetts? I should. So we spent 10 days in a row in June in California. And the reason I did it in part was I wanted to do it the same way there as I've done it elsewhere, and I wanted the press to go with me and to see the America that I've seen. Not just in a television studio, but out listening to people's stories. My first stop in California was in San Diego. It was a place called the Tucson Teen Center, which was a center run by the Archdiocese of San Diego. It was 15 men, 15 women, teenagers who'd gone off on the wrong way, and they come to Tucson Center to get back on the right way. And we were seated in a round circle, in a circle, I caught it for all those lost people. We were sitting in a four-sided square. And I asked one of them, Jason, to tell me their story. Tell me a story. He said he left home when he was in the sixth grade. He stayed with his mother, he stayed with his aunt, he stayed with his grandfather, he stayed with friends, he stayed on his own, he headed down the wrong road, he had drug problems, he had a series of other problems. And then his grandfather, he ran into one day, and his grandfather said, you know, I saw something on the evening TV news about some place called the Tucson Teen Center. Maybe you ought to go there. So Jason came down to the Tucson Teen Center. He'd been there now a year and a half. He'd been there now a year and a half, and he got his life back on track. Now, why is that a relevant story? It's a relevant story because it says that a president is important. A president says, this is the way we have to go. But if we're really going to turn the country around, we also need a media that tells good news stories as well as bad news stories. And finally, one of the great thrills, you know, if you're president and you say, this is the way you go, that's your program. Every president has a program. But the untapped potential of a presidency is to awaken in people those capacities that they did not think they had, or they might have forgotten, or they remember and forgotten about being a public citizen. And the essence of being a public citizen is the belief that through your individual involvement in politics, that you can bring real change. And when times are toughest, that's when people come together often. And I believe now times are good, but this is the time to come together to do the things that have been unfinished in our agenda for the United States of America. And here I think of the movement that goes forward. At the end of that week in New Hampshire, one woman came up to me and said, you know, I came here to work in the campaign, and I've left thinking I'm working for something a little bit more. And it is one person, it's like one drop of water that then finds several drops, that then becomes a rivulet, that then becomes a stream, that other streams fit into other streams, and then small creeks, and then rivers, and then bigger rivers, and finally the mighty Mississippi River. And that is the power that begins with one drop, one individual commitment, to a campaign and to a set of ideas that a campaign must embody. I hope that you agree with the ideas that I've set out that I want this campaign to embody and the presidency that I want this campaign to make sure that those ideas are accomplished. If you do, I hope you would come with us. Minnesota is terribly important. Early March caucuses. Nobody knows the caucuses better than Sheila and Paul Wellstone and George Latimer. Nobody knows it better than all of us. And if we work together, we can win and in the process make America what America should be. Thank you.